Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Endless Blue by Robin Rose Graves, with music by Onirathopter, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. When her eyes opened, she was underwater. Her cheeks puffed like a rodent, squirreling away her last rationed breath. Her bedroom was a fish tank. A dead current suspended her belongings like a gelatin full of fruit. There was a light outside her window. An entire world of green and sun on the other side of a half-inch plane of glass. When she touched it, she could almost detect its warmth. The window was jammed, the door locked. The only convincible way out was up to the surface. Her arms burned, threatened to give up entirely and allow her to sink into the darkest abyss of the ocean. Her breath was running out of viability. Defiant, she knew she was going to die. Her course altered, headed towards the dancing shag of the carpet. Let it be on her own terms. Air bubbled from her lips, water filling in displaced areas. She was water. In her nose and her mouth, in her lungs and her guts. No beginning nor end to her or the water. Only one. She felt its weight. Gravity calling her to the ocean floor. She longed to make it her bed, let her sleep. A gust of cold wind shook her awake. Not wind, but a current, rushing with the power of horses on a stampede. It dragged her along, up and away from her bed, creating space between the floor and her outstretched fingers. She flailed. She fought. The current was unrelenting. Her head broke through the surface. Above, a blue, cloudless sky illuminated by the oppressive shine of a burning sun. Her shriveled lungs bloomed with air. She treaded water, exhausted, yet somehow finding the strength. It wouldn't last forever. The ocean spread around her in all directions. Infinite, an endless blue. If she ever made it to land, she swore she would never touch water again. The Immortality Paradox by Mark D. Owen, with music by Patrick Earn, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. 2026, Boston, Massachusetts. The four of us stood in line at the genetic testing facility. Mick bounced on his tiptoes. Brick crossed his arms, stone-faced. DJ drummed on his pants leg, and I, a.k.a. Maze, rubbed my thumb on my forefinger, making the noise that annoyed DJ so much. We'd shared schools, summer camps, sports teams, daring adventures, girlfriends, and traumas since kindergarten. We cheered and flexed when Mick's dad won the bodybuilding state championship and began our own lifelong commitment to exercise. We grieved and cried with DJ when his mother gasped her last breath from lung cancer and made a pact that none of us would ever smoke again. Last year, we placed in the Gaming Internationals as the hive-minded crew of Spaceship Paradox. We were the fearsome four. And now, we'd find out if we'd become literal BFFs, best friends forever. The test, at $400, was expensive for four college buddies. But Brick worked part-time at his dad's architectural firm, yielding spending money to share. We each pitched in what we had, but held back enough to pay for our round of drinks after. Only 5% tested positive for the immortality gene, but we felt invincible and confident we could beat the odds. The four white envelopes in our hands remained unopened until we got to the Bookends pub on campus with a pint in our hands. "To immortality," Mick said as we each clinked our glasses and quaffed the first third. We took a picture of ourselves in that pregnant moment of hope, youth, and ambition. Ripping open our envelopes, I held mine up first. "Looks like I'm buying the next round." The others grinned at me awkwardly as I realized I alone tested positive. "Maze is buying for a change. I'll drink to that," Brick said. Not much changed at first, except maybe the banter between us. I couldn't afford the treatments until I finished college, so I kept it quiet and worked and played hard as usual. Sometimes I would say something about our future and they'd all laugh. "There goes the immortal Maze again." Like I was a crazy animal stuck running around a maze. They knew my future would not be like theirs. Denver, Colorado. Offers flowed toward me after I graduated and released my test results. Interviews on podcasts and television. Scholarships from groups to train me as a financial manager for the long game. Multi-generational investments. Healthcare firms wanting administration for the new Immortal Care program. Space companies wanted astronauts for interstellar flights. Researchers wanted my blood, my saliva, my sperm, my skin, my hair. And lucrative offers kept coming. Companies and organizations who just wanted me associated with them in some way compensated me more than I would have earned as an engineer. I became a genetic celebrity. A genebrity. Although 5% of the world theoretically possessed the gene, only about a third of those had been discovered. Many in the world could not afford the test, and the sustaining drug regimen was an ongoing expense of nearly $50,000 per year. Philanthropists and corporations began immortal mining the developing world, looking for those to support through the process. Of those identified, most were much older, much younger, or their interest and abilities did not align with those funding the treatment. The drug regimen did not return a person to their prime. It kept you at the age level where you started taking the meds. I was one of the 0.1% of the optimum age, intelligence, interest, and physical abilities to be locked in and supported by sponsors. Well, I took the scholarships to become an astronaut, and went to the best schools with new funding. My buddies all went home and got jobs to pay off their college debts. They attended graduation for my second PhD in astrophysics, following my first one in mechanical engineering. Brick took an executive role in his father's company and showed up sporting his fine-looking wife and his sturdy-looking kid. Boasting of three girlfriends, DJ took over running his uncle's audio component store and was playing drums in a rock band. Mick joined the Coast Guard, and whenever he was on leave, we got together and heard the story of his adventures in sea and a girl in every port. The girl on my arm was the prettiest of all, sweet Ruthie, an old soul filled with kindness, compassion, whose inner fire and mischievous glances kept me eternally intrigued. 2036, Stardust, Nevada. Ruth and I dated for 7 years before my career at Dark Star Energy and apparent age became too much for her. "Maze, you'll forget me soon," she said. The teeny wrinkles in the corners of her mouth, the heaviness under her eyes, and the color in her skin revealed her age, but she was beautiful to me. Looking the same as 10 years earlier, I became the college boy, now awkwardly too young for her. When I signed on to the Centauri Arc Ship program as chief technical officer, her fears were confirmed. My friends met me at the launch celebration, and I could see they had steeled themselves against this day. They had families now, careers, and knew I was going on a trip which would last the rest of their lifetimes. They were supportive of my success, but our lives unexpectedly diverged, with mine spinning out into space. DJ had thoughtfully put together a collection of all the photos from our many adventures and music files from our youth. "So you don't forget us out there," he said. "As if I could." Ruth looked at me with longing resignation, happy for me but sad for us. The fearsome four celebrated our final time together in person, vowing to span our friendship across time and space. (2046) Edge of Solar System. 10 years out, the Centauri Arc ship entered the Oort cloud, a region of space unexplored even with probes. The information we gathered changed mankind's understanding of dark matter, dark energy, and the formation of our solar system forever. Still, more than 100 years from the nearest solar system, the 19 of us on the Centauri, the prime immortals, as we cynically called ourselves, bonded as an elite team around the work we shared. We cared for the frozen eggs and sperms of immortal gene donors from Earth in the hope that these would produce babies like us. We kept the complex systems on the ship operational, sending back information about space travel, the planets, and our discoveries along the way. It took more than a year to exchange information with Earth, which now came as monthly data dumps. I'd review the pictures of my friends and listen to the songs only when I'd get a message from Earth. I'd get news from them every few months about something which happened even longer ago. (2096) Deep Empty Space. I learned Ruth had died a year after her death. In my mind, she was young, beautiful, and vibrant. Now she was just an ache in my heart. My three retired buddies enjoyed becoming grandparents, with kids in college as old as when we took that picture in the pub all those years ago. I once thought I had won the lottery, and that every good in my life was because of my rare gene. That horrible test destroyed my friendships and ended the life I once loved. Trapped on this spaceship with 18 others, while everything that once mattered to me shriveled and died. DJ sent my friend's final note to me. "We're proud of you, Maze. You'll be our legacy on another world." I cried, looking at his thinning hair and the age spots on his crinkled face. My gene eroded every relationship, some with jealousy, some with a godlike reverence, some with the disgust of my difference, some with the grinding dust of time. The prime immortals deserved each other locked away in this ship far from humanity. The next day, while stewing in my misfortunes, I lost concentration while cleaning the exhaust port seals. I sequenced the purge while I was still in the shaft scrubbing the seal. The vacuum pulled at my cleaning cloth, and I clutched at it with my left hand while closing the ports with my right. The port closed with the three fingers on my left hand sheared off and floated off into the cold darkness of space. 2126, edge of Centauri system. 100 years have passed since I became immortal. Time doesn't go faster, I just have more of it. Healthy living still takes work. Mental health takes more and more effort. Character flaws are slowly replaced with steady wisdom. The brain recycles information, so only what is refreshed remains. However, scars and injuries accumulate. Immortality did not make us indestructible. I chose to remember my friends and the only Earth woman I ever truly loved. Our ship bears little resemblance to the one that left Earth. Using designs sent in the monthly data dumps, we had replaced most of our systems with new components printed from materials gathered along the way. We'd gained speed, shortening our time. We reconfigured the ship to support the new tasks for the final stage of our journey. Earth has changed a lot in those years we've been gone, and I don't want to go back. There's nothing left for me there. We will be entering the Centauri Trinary system soon. Our work will change to incubating the first generation and helping them grow and prepare to survive on the planet. They will look to us as parents and teachers and coaches and counselors, roles none of us have known before. I am not the man that left Earth all those years ago. I have become Maze, the prime immortal, the genesis of a new spaceman, the founder of Centaurians, and father of a Centauri generation who will never know Earth. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Endless Blue by Robin Rose Graves, with music by Onirathopter, and The Immortality Paradox by Mark D. Owen, with music by Patrick Earn. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Out now, Simultaneous Times Volume 2 Paperback Science Fiction Anthology. And this month, we have a special free gift for you at our new website, spacecowboybooks.com. Download the free ebook, Simultaneous Times Volume 2.5, with stories you've heard here on this podcast and some that you haven't. Get in touch with us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.